Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today I talked to Robert Swayze, who is the Integrity Commissioner for the City of Guelph, and if you're lucky, then you will only ever have to hear from the Integrity Commissioner once a year when he or she delivers their annual report. But if your council is dysfunctional and unable to work together cordially or in good faith, then the Integrity Commissioner is your best friend. Keeping council up to code is the topic of this edition of the Guelph Politicast. So how does this work? Why is it up to the Integrity Commissioner to police City Council? Well, let's start with the Code of Conduct for Council and Local Boards, which, according to the city website, is meant to make sure members, quote, charge their duties in a manner that recognizes a fundamental commitment to the well-being of the community and regard for the integrity of the corporation, unquote. That means being committed to avoiding the improper use of influence of their office, like through gifts or bribes, avoiding and declaring conflicts of interest, both real and apparent, making sure members perform their duties while in office in a manner that promotes the public confidence and will bear close public scrutiny, and make sure that members seek to serve the public interest by upholding both the letter and the spirit of the law. That is a lot to keep in mind. So how does the Integrity Commissioner come into play? Well, council appoints the Integrity Commissioner, who makes sure that the code of conduct is correctly and thoroughly applied, and with that comes the power to recommend an appropriate penalty, whether that's a reprimand or a suspension. The Integrity Commissioner also provides advice and information to members of council and boards to make sure that they don't contravene the code, either willingly or accidentally. Now, Guelph makes that look easy. This year's Integrity Commissioner's report had three items on it. A complaint about staff that Swayze can't investigate, a complaint about a counselor's fence at their home that Swayze also has no jurisdiction over, and a complaint about a council debate that Swayze ruled was spirited, but not bullying as indicated in that complaint. Things aren't always as smooth, though. So what happens if the proverbial stuff hits the proverbial fan? This week on the Guelph Politicast, that's one of the many questions that Swayze will take his turn to answer for a change. We'll talk about the limits of his jurisdiction and what he can and cannot investigate. We'll talk about his process, what he does when he receives a complaint, and what informs his judgments. We also talk about whether or not a busy Integrity Commissioner is really a sign of a council in peril, and whether or not the people and the media are getting enough information about what goes on behind those closed doors at council. And then finally, we'll get some insight into what it looks like when city councils aren't as dull as ours. So I caught up with Robert Swayze last week in studio. So Robert Swayze, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
We were talking this a brief second ago, but I am curious about what the difference is between what you do as the Integrity Commissioner and what the Ontario Ombudsman does, because both are kind of in charge of overseeing, you know, how things are handled in the municipal level. But what goes to an Integrity Commissioner like you, and what goes to the Ombudsman?
Well, both. Anything can go to the Integrity Commissioner. Anything can go to the Ombudsman. For an Integrity Commissioner, it must be a complaint against a member of council. Mm-hmm. The Ombudsman has a broader jurisdiction. He can deal with systemic problems between council and staff, involving staff, etc. I have no jurisdiction over staff. All I do is investigate councilors. Now, the Ombudsman is a single person with a large office, and he was recently given jurisdiction over municipalities. The big difference is that I report to council, and the Ombudsman does not. The Ombudsman is a provincial office. So I have difficulty, for example, fielding complaints about all of council. I have to deal with individual councillors,
Okay. Whereas
the Ombudsman can deal with, as I said, systemic problems in the municipality involving staff and council.
So you're very limited in terms of what you can look at. People can't just call you up and go, like, the council is betraying the public trust and or something to that regard.
No, that's true. And also, Adam, I've had complaints about the dog catcher. And of course, I don't have any jurisdiction over staff, so I dismiss those complaints immediately.
Right. Do you just, like, is there an education portion to that where, you know, somebody's like wants to make a complaint about the dog catcher but you can't look at it, you can always go to the ombudsman, you might say, or
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But I don't think the ombudsman's going to stoop to deal with something like that. I mean, you should go to the I guess the staff person who's in charge of dog catching.
But can you give somebody that direction, or is it like just like a walled off, unless it's somebody like Councilman A or Councilwoman B, I have a complaint about them?
They have to name the councilor, and I have to deal with it. If they name all of council, I have difficulty because I report to council, and I can't. Council is all powerful as far as I'm concerned, but individual councilors can breach the code of conduct. Everything depends for me on the code of conduct.
Briefly tell us about the code of conduct. Like what exactly does that entail?
Well, it's a document that every municipality in Ontario must have. It provides for both the rules of conduct for municipal councillors, and also the procedure for me to follow. Now, sometimes they separate it from a code of conduct into a what they call a complaint protocol. But in Guelph, it's one document, and my procedure and my the rules that I follow are in the code of conduct.
Mm-hmm. So there's no sort of, I imagine there's some overlap in terms of things that various codes of conduct have in common, but you can't take what you know about the Guelph Code of Conduct and apply it to Kitchener or Waterloo or...
No. Everyone has a separate code of conduct. I guess pretty much most of them are different, but it's been building over... Like, I've been doing this for 11 years, and codes of conduct they started in the City of Toronto. And as some of those were copied, and then they were revised, and it's kind of evolved. And there's been best practices applied and various things going on. So that now, and Guelph recently revised their code of conduct. Mm-hmm. So it really, it's an evolving process, but most of the codes of conduct are very similar.
Mm-hmm. But it's a relatively new idea, is that right? To have a code of conduct, to have an integrity commissioner.
Well, not that. I mean, new. I don't know what you mean. Relatively
well, maybe,
new, but in 2005, I believe.
I'd consider that new.
Okay, integrity commissioner was required for the City of Toronto. Then it was broadened to voluntary through in 2006 to all municipalities. And I think about 30 municipalities adopted a code of conduct and retained an integrity commissioner. Now, as of Bill 68, which was passed last year and is effective on March the 1st of this year, it is mandatory that all municipalities have a code of conduct and appoint an integrity commissioner.
Mm.
Okay. 444 municipalities.
Right.
I only have 34 of them.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it like concentrated in like around the Guelph area and southwestern Ontario?
You mean my clients? No,
yeah.
No.
So
no,
you have to do some traveling.
Well, they're all over the province, yes.
Okay.
In fact, I just got back yesterday from Espanola, which is Sudbury and another hour beyond Sudbury. So I gave a workshop there.
Oh, okay. So there was no trouble in Espanola.
No.
Which sounds like a Tarantino movie. coming back to Guelph, though, you recently gave your report. It's usually at the end of April, I believe.
That I did an annual report once a year. And Guelph has very few investigations that I've carried out, although I've been the integrity commissioner since 2011.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask about that because I think on the one hand, people can take a certain sense of pride that we don't have a lot of complaint, that our, it seems that by and large our counselors are acting in good faith. But as you just said, you're also supervising 34 different councils, and maybe without naming names, is there perhaps an idea that if there's sort of if the code of conduct isn't being tested, maybe that there's maybe stagnation at some of these councils, or that maybe that there's virtue in having the code contested? Do you see where I'm going?
I see where you're going, but I'll tell you a story of a mayor in Western Ontario who was quoted in his local newspaper. He said, "I understand this Mr. Swayze is a nice guy. I hope I never meet him." it's good if I never show up. It's mm-hmm. good if there are no complaints. And I have a lot of clients which have never had a complaint. Guelph is a large city. Mm-hmm. Like, I have some townships that are only 3,000 or 4,000 people. Mm. I also had Mississauga for 5 years, which is 700,000 people. Mm-hmm. So you never know which municipality is going to be active. I think in 2017, my most active client was Wasaga Beach. And in 2018, it was Prince Edward County. There's no population there, but right. but the council was divided, and various, you know, people make complaints to me based on political motivation, and sometimes I dismiss those summarily because they're not valid.
Are those easy to suss out?
What do you mean?
That someone's doing something because it's political? That,
well, I. Probably 50% of the complaints I receive, I dismiss with a 5-minute email. Mm. Now, sometimes I don't do that. Sometimes I ask a few questions. I start an investigation. I ask a few questions of a few people, and I find out that this is all either coming out of confusion or politically motivated, and I dismiss it. But most counselors accept the fact that that I try to be fair, reasonable. I use common sense in my decisions, and most of them feel that a code of conduct does not interfere with them doing their job as a counselor.
Right, but I think counselors are probably fairly aware of what rules govern them. Do you talk to councils, like when new councils are joined, that maybe going over codes of conduct? Is that part of your job?
I do. I just, in Espanola, I did right. a workshop yesterday. Mm-hmm. And so I've done a lot of workshops all over the province. And this is a presentation that I make dealing with all of the different rules. And I mean, there are some rules that I just don't enforce. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example.
Okay. I've
had a number of complaints saying my ward counselor won't return my calls.
I can imagine.
So you look at the code of conduct. It says, well, you got to respect everybody. You've got to treat everybody with respect and understanding and all the rest of it. And so early on, when I first got a complaint like that, I looked at the code of conduct and I said, this is contrary to the code of conduct. You got to return calls. And you're going to talk about procedure later, but what I do is I send the complaint to the counselor, and I say, please respond within 10 days. Mm. And I think that's what's in the code in Guelph. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't get a response in 10 days. You get a phone call saying, this person is crazy. If I return all his calls, I won't have any time to do anything.
Right.
So then you say to yourself, okay, that makes sense. A counselor should be able to do this from time to time. But what do I do with the complainant? Do I write back to him and say, your complaint is dismissed because you're crazy? I can't do that.
I wouldn't think so.
All right, so fortunately, the City of Toronto Integrity Commissioner in 2006 had the same problem, and he asked for a legal opinion. Mm-hmm. And the legal opinion is that these principles, as compared to rules in a code of conduct, are not something that you can found an investigation on. In other words, leave it to the electorate, and that's what I do. So with something like that, if you don't return a lot of calls, you're not going to get elected next time.
Right.
So I bow out of that based on this legal opinion.
Right, and you basically say, you know, everybody's free to go out and say, you know, Counselor so-and-so won't return my phone calls, don't re-elect them. Right. And That's right. Yeah, so it's not necessarily looking for a remedy from the Integrity Commissioner, especially in something like that where it's like maybe you return 95% of your phone calls.
Right, but if there's a rule broken, like confidential information, there's disclosure of that or some gift or any kind of a gift like accommodation at a cottage or various things I've seen. If it's related to the duties of the counselor, I jump in and do an investigation and see if it's warranted or not. And so there's about seven rules that I enforce.
Okay. Can you say what they are?
Can I
or is
remember,
it a,
can
is
I remember
it a surprise?
Them all? Well, let's go through them. Sure, I can go through them. There's confidentiality. That's if you have an in-camera meeting. It's very important that everybody can speak their mind and know that it's not going to leave the walls of that room.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't disclose anything. It's spoken in a confidential meeting, a closed session meeting. There's gifts. There's improper influence.
Mm-hmm.
There's using city property.
Mm.
There's harassment.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. There's most of them have something about social media, which I could talk about. That's about all I can think of right now. But there's seven of them. I must have missed a couple of them.
I think you missed one, which isn't bad. I did want to talk about the confidentiality angle, not necessarily what's talked about confidentially, but I mean in specifically about in-camera meetings and closed meetings. And I actually quote you a lot when I'm writing about whether or not the city of Guelph goes into closed meetings mm-hmm. too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I think it was 2018, it wasn't necessarily a verdict you were rendering, but you were definitely trying to tip something to council that maybe they shouldn't go into closed meetings too much. And I'm wondering, just generally from your experience, you know, are we making much ado about this, the fact that we, you know, maybe we're so worried about what goes on in camera, or is there sort of a genuine concern that maybe council, just as like a precautionary step, leans on in camera too much?
I'm not the closed meeting investigator for Guelph, but on the other hand, I'm happy to answer the question. I think
there's a separate person who investigates.
That's correct. But the Municipal Act, in my view, is mm-hmm. very clear mm-hmm. on the rules that permit you to have a closed session meeting. There's legal advice. There's acquiring real estate, acquiring land. You want to fire a staff member, this kind of thing. These are all things that you're allowed to. So I don't think, I haven't seen any example of Guelph going into a closed session meeting.
Mm.
Because they get advised by their staff. Their staff are experts, and they're going to tell them whether they can or cannot. I remember one time in Guelph, there was some councillors felt very strongly about one issue, and they left the meeting, which meant that the quorum didn't happen.
Right.
And I received a complaint saying, this is not appropriate. They have a job to do. They must sit in the meeting and vote. And I said, no, it's a political strategy that they employed, and it's entirely up to them. So that was one example in Guelph.
Right. Politics isn't always a four-letter word. It's a tool that's available to the people using it. I appreciating that this isn't necessarily your area of expertise, but I wonder if, just say for an example, there's a real estate deal, and when the council goes into closed meeting. They'll come back, and Mayor Guthrie will say something to the effect of, "We met on this real estate sale at 123 Fake Street, and we gave direction to staff."
Right.
Which is very, you know, he's fulfilled the requirements, which is to tell people what happened.
Yes.
He gave direction to staff.
That's right.
But is there a more mushier middle there where we could get something more specific about what was talked about 123 Fake Street without having to go, Councillor X said this and Councillor Y said that, which I think is what you kind of get at when you're talking about confidentiality, that people should be free to express themselves in a situation like this. But is there a way that we as the public can get more information?
It's an easy answer. No.
No?
No.
It's not that simple.
it's very important that these things be kept confidential. I mean, I've had some terrible disclosures. I've had...
Okay.
In other municipalities, not in Guelph, I've had a disclosure of there's a small town that has a big park in the middle of it, and every August, they have bikers that take over the park, and they take over the town, and there's...
Motorcyclists, not cyclists.
Bikers, yeah. Thousands of them. And this real estate agent wrote a letter, and... He said, "Couldn't we make it more a family-oriented event instead of?" And of course, that got leaked to the bikers, and the bikers and his business went in half because anybody who listed with him got a visit from the bikers.
Right.
So there's some things you should not be disclosing, and certainly if you're buying real estate acquiring land that the municipality needs. Of course you can't make that public.
Right.
So you as a reporter have to be left out, I'm afraid.
Okay. I want to keep talking about the mushy middle here because one of the complaints that you got last year was about the debate about the internet voting, which was quite contentious because people have some very strong feelings about it. And there was one complaint that maybe a councillor was being harassed, and you came... back in your judgment and your decision and said it was a spirited debate, and that's a direct quote from you, is that it was a spirited debate.
Yeah.
How do you determine what is harassment and what is a spirited debate? Because I imagine that's a fuzzy line at times.
It's a very fuzzy line, but there is a line you can cross. But but debate and spirited debate is important to democracy at every level. And I'm not going to stifle anybody from doing their job if they feel strongly about an issue. You can cross the line. I had a deputy mayor, I won't name the municipality, who I had warned her about some of her comments about the mayor. She hated the mayor. I had warned her a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't impose any sanctions on her. But finally, in an open council, she called the mayor dirty because he met with one side of an issue and didn't meet with the other side.
Right.
And I felt that was crossing the line, having been warned, and I imposed sanctions on her. I recommended that her salary be lessened for a certain amount. She crossed the line.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to suspend as much as 90 days' salary of a counselor.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. So she had said something to the effect of, "I don't think you can make this decision until you meet with both sides." That would get the Swayze stamp of approval. But it was that she basically.
Yeah, that's right. She thought she was trying to get the mayor, and that's it. But anyway, no, I extend quite a lot of latitude to all my municipalities when they have emotional debate,
right,
and things are said that maybe are a little over the top. But hey, you're on council. You got to expect to be criticized. You got to expect to defend your arguments,
right,
and you got to have be a little bit tolerant.
Right. Are you ever proactive? Like, I realize that almost three dozen municipalities, you can't watch the council meetings from all of them, but I imagine you get rumblings at times.
No, I'm completely complaints-driven.
Okay.
And that's why I can do 34 municipalities.
Right.
I mean, I don't read the local newspaper.
Okay.
I don't patrol. I don't do that. Okay. If I get a complaint, I deal with it.
Okay.
But that's the only way I get involved. Unless counsel directs me to do something or ask for an opinion,
right,
I can do that. Now I have jurisdiction also under the Municipal Conflict of Interest Act under the new legislation, and so I can do that as well.
I imagine you'd probably either need a staff or a bigger retainer if that was the case, if you had to scan all the newspapers.
I would.
I want to talk about the process a bit, because you've talked about how, you know, half the complaints you get, you kind of dismiss with a couple of emails and maybe a phone call. But how do you go about, like, let's use something kind of specific, like, the case of the deputy mayor who crossed the line. You know, how would you receive that complaint? How does an investigation go?
Well, the great thing about now is that most of these council meetings are video. They're on YouTube. So that's complete evidence as far as I'm concerned in terms of harassment and various things. So But I talk to anybody that the complainant wants me to talk to. Mm. The first thing that's very important, and I think most codes of conduct in the province have been changed, the complaint goes through the clerk's office, which is a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's a complaint by one councillor to another, then what happens is the complaint comes to the clerk. The clerk is obligated to keep things confidential. The clerk sends it to me. I send it to the respondent counselor.
Mm-hmm.
So then the complainant counselor goes to the clerk and says, "You knew about this and you didn't tell me?" So, I mean, she immediately is thrown between two counselors, is thrown between two counselors, and so the complaint must come to me directly. So I receive them. I receive them preferably by email, and sometimes I get them in other ways. And then I look at them. I assess whether it's on its face, it's a valid complaint. And sometimes I have to go back to the complainant and say, "Here's a copy of the code of conduct. Give me a section. Give me the sections that have been violated. Otherwise, I have to look at the code of conduct." And so that's what happens. And then if I decide that it's worth an investigation, sometimes the investigation is one phone call or two phone calls.
Yeah.
But mostly I interview people personally, and I come to a decision whether, in my opinion, they've violated the code of conduct. I always personally interview the respondent if I think it's very serious, and I always, before I file a report with the municipality, I always talk to the respondent, telling him or her what my decision is, summarizing the reasons for recommending sanctions and the sanctions I'm going to recommend. And I don't give them the ombudsman thinks I should, but I don't give them a draft report, because it always ends up with you people, the reporters, or on Facebook, etc. So I don't do that.
Yeah.
And then I make sure that the counselor has a copy of the report before the press gets it. So they're always posted a certain time on the website, and I make sure they have them in advance, because if you call them, they want to know, they need to know what I've said in my report.
Mm. I wanted to circle back to something that you just made me remember. Counselors, of course, are aware of the code of conduct, hopefully have read the code of conduct. Mm. I don't expect the public to have, though. And I imagine to the public, you know, when you say, can you point to a portion of the code of conduct where you think this has been violated, that may be the first time they've maybe seen the actual code of conduct.
I don't think that's valid, because, the code of conduct and the integrity commissioner go together.
Right.
And if somebody is going to file a complaint, they should realize that it's a complaint. I have to look at the code of conduct and find a section that but there are some people who are confused,
right?
And they don't. You're right. There are a few of them, but not that many,
right?
And so I always get back to them with a copy of the code of conduct I attach and ask them for specifics as to what rule was breached.
Right. I just, you know, one of the things I come from is that I think there's an education gap just generally, like how City Hall and City Councils function and what the public perception is.
I agree. In fact, some people look down their nose at municipalities, but in my opinion, they are the most complicated municipality to administer or to be a politician in. Because imagine if you could have a cabinet at the municipal level where you have a leader, the mayor, I guess, and everybody in the cabinet is loyal to him because they were appointed by him or her. And that's simple to get things done. Try to have a bunch of disparate councilors who are elected all over the place,
right?
And they don't report to anyone. They're not loyal to anyone except their constituents,
right?
So it's very complicated to bring that all together.
It's a relief that you don't get called more often.
No, I thought no. Guelph is one of the less active municipalities that I have.
I'm sure.
And it's large, too. It's 100 and some odd thousand.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you do when you're not getting complaints? I mean, you cover a wide swath, of course, but, you know, I imagine you talk about doing workshops and things. So, you know, what does your life look like when it's all quiet?
You know, the election happened just last year, and so that's why I'm doing a lot of workshops now. There are a lot of new councillors. And the requirement that 444 municipalities have a code of conduct and appoint an integrity commissioner has made my life very busy, needless to say. So I'm doing a lot of educational sessions now. That'll slow down. But there's a great many municipalities I hardly ever hear from. And that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't try to push for work. I've got enough to work on with 34 of them.
Right. Maybe to wrap up, you know, can you talk about how maybe the job could be made easier for you? Like, do you encounter things that, you know, if you had the power to change the way, you know, you administer your job, or if there was like some sort of, I imagine you're asked for feedback occasionally about how the processes work. But, you know, what's something that you encounter on the job that you would like to see changed?
I guess there's only a couple of things. I don't think that an integrity commissioner, just a independent lawyer, should have the power to remove counselors from council. That's really something up to the court, and that's under the Municipal Conflict of Interest Act. I have that jurisdiction to take a matter to court and have somebody removed. But I don't want that power. I think the 90 days suspension of pay is sufficient. I really can't find a lot of things wrong. One of the areas that bothers me, and I did make my submission to the province when the Bill 68 was out for comment. Most procedural bylaws in a municipality provide that if you refuse to vote, your vote is counted as negative.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a section in the Municipal Act that that mostly requires the municipalities to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that if you declare a personal conflict, you don't have a pecuniary conflict under the Municipal Conflict of Interest Act, you have a personal conflict. If you declare that and not vote, then your vote is counted as negative. I think it should just be counted as a non-vote. I think people should be encouraged to declare personal conflicts. Things like, well, I'll give you an example. I had one municipality where a lady was the chairman of a charity. She wasn't paid for that.
Right.
And it was grant time, and municipalities give out money and give out free floor space and various things. And it was that time, and she put herself on as a deputation to council and said, I need more money for this charity. I'm the chairman, and we do this and we do that, and we don't have enough money. I think we should have X dollars more. Now, her husband was on council.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, he has no pecuniary conflict because she's not paid.
Right.
He sat there and argued on her behalf, didn't declare a conflict, and just went on and on and on. Of course, it's not contrary to the Municipal Conflict of Interest Act, but it sure made council, all of the other councilors, feel very embarrassed
right.
for him, all right, because he obviously had a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is the definition in the Municipal Conflict of Interest Act. A family does not include siblings.
And, really?
So that means that your sister, a counselor's sister, can come to the municipality with a, come to the council with a multi-million dollar contract, and you can vote for her and do whatever you want because she's not included as a family member.
Huh.
So there's a few massaging that's needed of the legislation. But otherwise, I'm very proud of what all of us have done. We have an association called Municipal Integrity Commissioners of Ontario. I'm certainly, Bill 68 was an endorsement of what we've been doing for the last 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's worked out very well for municipalities and for citizens of all the municipalities.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think there's anything left to say, but I hope we don't meet in official capacity.
There you go.
Robert, thank you so much for coming by and sharing your expertise.
My pleasure, indeed.
And once again, that was Robert Swayze, the Integrity Commissioner for the City of Guelph, and as you heard, 33 other municipalities. And if you should happen to have a complaint about City Council and a potential violation of the Code of Conduct, you can get all the details about how to file that complaint at the city's website at guelph.ca. The precise link can be found in the show notes for this episode. And that is it for this episode of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale, the host for the Guelph Politicast. It's Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. Check out Guelph Politico on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico, and you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you very shortly. And until then, see you next time.